From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. It is another Friday morning, meaning you're going to get another recording from our Thursday night live shows at Funky's on the Oxford Square. We've been doing them for over a month now. Back again last night, Russell Johnson, our recruiting analyst, joining us as we took a bit of a deep dive in the first half of the show into Ole Miss football. How much of a quick fix is there for it, and how can the Rebels start that improvement back to where they were a few years ago? So that's what's on tap. We also go through Neil's picks, those up at rebelgrove.com this morning, as well as a free guest Friday with the Oxford Exxon. Follow the Oxford Exxon on Twitter. Their question is, how are you feeling headed into tomorrow's game with Ole Miss and Kent State? You reply in GIF form, and three winners will be picked for free tanks of gas before you leave town this weekend. So subscribe to rebelgrove.com. Check out the Oxford Exxon on Twitter to participate in Free Gas Friday. When you need a new vehicle, check out Clark Ford in Amory. 662-257-1900 is the phone number. Highway 25 South is the address. And you know by now that at the end of the deal, tell them you heard about the podcast. And when you do that, $500 off more from Clark Ford there. Get a great deal in Amory on your new Ford vehicle. We are at Funky's. Thanks again to Blue Delta Jeans for the trivia question, as they do every single week. I've been wearing Blue Delta to the games every Saturday. Will tomorrow. You should try them out as well. You won't regret it. You'll have multiple pair before you know it. So I forgot to hit the record button when we got started. You're going to come into this interview in a second, in about 20 seconds into the show. Nothing crazy. You didn't miss anything, but you get me, Neil, and Russell for about an hour. We're going to go through Neil's picks and, again, talk very, very in-depth about Ole Miss football. There's also a greatest pod in the South up this morning. There is a soft verbal up. It's more basketball recruiting-centric is where they went with that show this week, presented by Billy's Pecans. So enjoy. We'll have plenty of coverage from the game tomorrow at rebelgrove.com. But in the meantime, here's the live show from Thursday night, the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
On today's podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about what this thing looks like, where it goes from here, and frankly, how Ole Miss recovers following the 2 weeks of a first half to forget against Southern Illinois, and then this past week against Alabama, a 62-7 tied win there. As always, at Funky's, we've got specials, $2 domestics, $12 one-topping pizza are the specials this week, and Blue Delta supplying the trivia question. Once again, a $200 gift certificate to Blue Delta with the question that I'll give out here in about 15 minutes or so as we're moving through the podcast, so I will give that. But I think we're in line for a pretty good show. We'll take some questions from the limited audience. A little apathy setting in the fan base this week, but it's okay.
I am reminded of that scene in Major League where Bob Uecker is in the announcer's booth in the press box, and they say something about a play, and they all just kind of create the noise, like, "Hey, way to go! Woo, way to go! Way to go! Woo, good job!"
Well, it's when he starts cussing there at the end, and the guy's like, "Hey, you're on the air," and he's like, "Nobody's listening
anyway."
No one's
listening.
Yeah, that's where it's going. So we'll have a trivia question. We'll go through some different things with you. We'll do Neil's picks as well, although I would suggest reading them in the morning because Neil took a lot of liberties with the introduction. The interns are the topic once again as we move through the week. I got friends walking by outside, can't even come in the building, just getting waved at from outside right now. So it is what it is. But anyway, let's get started, Neil. Ole Miss, Kent State, 11 a.m., our line we use every week if we're still talking about this, and that even means leading up to it. I know nothing about Kent State. I don't care. I'm not focusing on that because, as Hugh Freeze would always say, it's really about us. It's about Ole Miss this week, not Kent State, so I don't care about that. But we've all talked about the platitudes at the press conferences on Monday. We've all talked about how, in so many ways, this staff can't really say anything in some ways. I mean, I'm going to defend them here because, as we said, you go into the media and you go, hey, the guys are too slow, they're too small, they're whatever. Then you go into the locker room, you got problems. So it creates this thing where all interviews are worthless for a lot of the time. Everybody's talking around a lot of subjects. Everybody's talking around everything else. We had Tyler Siski on the show earlier this week discussing recruiting philosophies, how to make things work, where to go from here. And for Ole Miss, it can get fixed quickly. Hugh Freeze showed that. I mean, they were abysmal in 11. They were serviceable in 12 and kept growing from there. But it's taking a little of everything. It's taking better athletes. It's taking better coaching. What's the start of this thing for Ole Miss?
To me, there's absolutely no doubt that at the end of this season, and I do mean immediately after this season.
If not before.
But certainly at the end of the season, you're going to see a staff shakeup of sorts that was going to happen probably no matter how this season went down, because Matt Luke was not Ole Miss's coach until he was Ole Miss's coach. And I know that's a confusing thing when people hear it, but he didn't have any reason to believe going into Starkville on Thanksgiving night that he was going to get that job. And then they won a game. And the plan changed. And things moved very quickly. And at the end of Hugh Freeze's tenure, and this isn't going to be me ripping Hugh Freeze, I'm not. But at the end of Hugh Freeze's tenure, there was an NCAA investigation. There were rumblings about his personal life. And there were talent issues that were becoming readily evident. And to get coaches to come join him, and it's my opinion, he was not super popular among other coaches. Not all reasons his fault. Some of it was jealousy and that kind of thing. But regardless, to get coaches that he wanted to come in, they had to start giving bigger contracts. They had to give Wesley McGriff a 3-year deal, for example, to get him to take the job. Auburn wanted to keep Wesley McGriff as a recruiter. He wanted to be a defensive coordinator, and he was able to use some leverage. Good for him. I don't blame him. But when Matt takes the job in the last weekend of November last year, he really didn't have the time. He probably didn't have the resources. And I don't think he had really the inclination to shake it up at that moment, because they spent the entire season in 2017 saying, and they were right, that all we have is each other. All we have are these 12 opportunities. No one believes in us. No one thinks we're going to still be here. This thing might get all shook up right after Thanksgiving. Let's rally around one another.
Yeah, because during 2017, the coaches, from a coaching standpoint, are thinking two things. It's keep these guys together, win as many games as possible, A, for them, and A, for ourselves.
Sure.
And B, I either have a 2-year contract or I don't have a 2-year contract. That's what's on their minds at that point.
Yes, and the other thing that was said to kids, because a lot of kids were like, I might leave, I might not leave, I don't know what's going to happen. Kids were told, hey, don't forget, you might want to leave, but the people that you want to go play for are going to watch this film. You're on film. You're playing for yourself too. And so you were able to rally around all of that, and then they get the job. They beat Mississippi State. They get the job. And I think he kept everybody out of a sense of loyalty for what they had done together in 2017. But here we are today in 2018, and I don't think there's any question at all that he's got to shake up his staff. I expect multiple staff changes. I off the top of my head, I can think of 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5 changes.
Well, because, look, this is not all – now, look, it's a lot of performance-based, but there's also a bunch of guys on that staff that Matt just simply doesn't fit with and wouldn't have hired had he been the head coach to hire them. I think sometimes that's lost sometimes too. Is like Tyler always talking about player fit and everything else. There's also a coach fit when it comes to the head coach and
sure.
who he surrounds himself
of
with.
Of course.
And there's some of the staff that just doesn't fit that.
No, you're exactly right. And you have to have an offense that fits the defense. You have to have a...
Yeah, because you're big on that. You don't think they fit at all.
No, I don't think they fit at all. I think it's the marriage where you look and it's like a 6'8" woman and a 5'2" guy, and you're like, well, that doesn't work. I mean, they just don't fit. They don't look right. I don't think the offense and the defense meld. I mean, it's not about Phil Longo and his system, but his system is quick strike. And his system is, okay, there's a big play, let's go get it. And it's hurry, hurry, tempo, tempo. And then you have a defense that has no depth and a defense that is kind of sits back. It's not super aggressive. Neither one of those strategies is wrong. I just don't know that they fit together. And I'll be honest, I don't think either one of them are really the kind of football that Matt Luke wants to play.
Let me take an aside here. Bring Russell in. He hadn't spoken. He's just staring into his microphone here. Didn't even bring his water over to the table with him. Just kind of curious. We always talk about we've talked about Wesley a lot. I mean, that's the coach in everybody's mind. There's no way he's going to shy away from it. Let's talk about it. He was brought in primarily to be a recruiter. He was a very good recruiter the first time he was here. He got credit Laquan Treadwell and other guys, and he was kind of the big game hunter on that staff in 2012 for Ole Miss. I get that as a coordinator, it's a little different. You're not like the recruiting mercenary position coach, but how has he been received? What kind of recruiter is he as a coordinator now in 2018?
We're talking about McGriff, right?
Yeah, McGriff.
So McGriff came into this job. He was thought to be the recruiter that Ole Miss had needed for several years, and that really never has come to fruition since he's taken the job. He, in my opinion, took the job as the defensive coordinator in a role to show that he has the ability to coach X's and O's just as much as he does recruit. And in an effort to do that, he's kind of taken a step back as a recruiter, and he hasn't spent as much time evaluating kids. He's been delegating that to these position coaches and to other people, and in turn, his relationship with these kids isn't as strong as it would be if he was the position coach like he was at Auburn. At Auburn, he had hands-on, day-to-day communication with kids, and that was his main focus, as well as developing the position he was coaching. At Ole Miss, what he has to do is, first of all, try to figure out what's wrong with the Ole Miss defense, and secondly, how he's going to, plan to fix it. And like you guys were both saying about, him possibly not being Matt's guy, I mean, he had no say or impact at all on the decision to hire him or many of the other coaches on the staff, especially, one that recruits a certain territory.
Who are the recruits on the staff that are indispensable, that Ole Miss can't lose no matter what?
Recruiters on the staff?
Yeah.
Jacob Peeler, John Sumrall, possibly Jack Bicknell.
Okay.
Charles Clark is the secondary recruiter for several kids, but he hasn't really stepped up into that primary role. But that kind of goes back into, Clark was the decision was made to hire him from Matt Luke. He has a very similar recruiting base and territory as Wesley McGriff does. They both recruit the state of Florida. They both recruit the state of Georgia. And they're both really well known. Charles Clark has several DBs in the NFL. And Wesley McGriff, as you said, was known for recruiting players like Laquan Treadwell.
So there's overlap is what you're telling me. There's a little bit of lack of efficiency, if you will, with the recruiting territories.
I'm saying one hire was likely made in advance of a change.
I gotcha. Okay. Anyway, just kind of curious as we move on. Neil, go ahead.
I can't remember where I left off. I was listening to that. That was good.
Big Nail's interesting. I didn't realize that he had kind of taken that leap. Because, I mean, you expected him to be the big X's and O's guys, the technique guy. I mean, obviously, he's been a head coach before. He was at Louisiana Tech. But,
yeah.
I mean, I didn't just picture him as, hey, recruiting guy to move forward. I don't know why.
He's super sharp.
Yeah.
He's been a head coach, as you mentioned, for what, 6 years, I guess, at Louisiana Tech, something like that.
Was it really that long?
Yeah, it was for a good while.
Okay.
And then he's been in the NFL for a long time. One of the people in our audience has a Utah Jazz polo. That is cool. I like the Jeff, fun to watch. Anyway, he's a really good – he's a very good X and O guy. He's got an NFL pedigree. He is authentic with the kids.
He is.
When he doesn't do that yelling, screaming stuff. He tells them, this is how we do this. And then kids know, this guy knows how the NFL works. And then I think he's just a good person. He's just a nice guy. I don't know how long he stays at Ole Miss. I think Matt would like to keep him.
I guess that was my point, is when it's first made, it looks like a stopgap, but then he's fit in well in every different way where it can make it a long-term
thing. It
probably
was a stopgap, you know, and then sometimes things work out. And everything I've heard is he likes Oxford, he likes it here, he likes working for Matt. Matt certainly knows the importance of an offensive line coach. Because I think last year sometimes Matt wanted to go over there and coach, and you can't do that. You've got to have the guy that – you got to let the guy coach because you got to go do other stuff. And
you have to be able to trust him.
Yeah, and Bicknell has been in the NFL for so long that you couldn't throw an offense at him that he can't acclimate to. He can acclimate immediately to anything. So whatever the direction is that Ole Miss's offense takes, and I'll be honest, I mean, I think Phil Longo's really good at what he does. I think Longo's a smart guy, but I think Longo wants to be a head coach. I think there are going to be opportunities for him in the near future, perhaps at the end of this season. I think he's on Rutgers' shortlist. I think he's on UTEP's shortlist. He might very well be on Texas Tech's shortlist if they make a change.
I mean, Neil Brown's their 1A, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Neil Brown makes so much sense for them. But Neil Brown might have better opportunities. Neil Brown's built a program at Troy that, I mean, I almost got into an argument with someone the other day, and it wasn't really, I wasn't trying to argue, but someone said, so do you really believe that Troy has more talent on offense than Ole Miss does on defense? And this wasn't on the message board, by the way. This was a human interaction.
And I said, human interaction?
A little. And I said, yeah.
Yeah, well, hold on. To set the scenario, who are you talking to? Like, what? How'd this happen?
I was just talking to a friend.
Like, on the phone?
On the phone.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, in public.
Oh,
you ran
God,
into
no,
someone.
No, I wear headphones in public.
Yeah.
No, I was just on the phone, and he said, do you really believe that? And I said, I do. And he said, based on what? And I said, well, I watched the first quarter of Troy and Nebraska. And what I saw with Troy was athletes. Now, do they have a bunch of elite five stars? Of course not. But they've been able to go get that high three-star player that doesn't get an Alabama offer and doesn't get an Auburn offer and maybe is a late bloomer. And then they've developed some talent. And so I said, Troy's, yeah, they're really athletic. That big, tall wide receiver that made plays all day against Nebraska, he would play at Ole Miss. It's not a criticism of Ole Miss, but it's a you can build a program at a number of places. So my point about Neil Brown is Texas Tech may have waited a year too long. Neil Brown might get a much bigger job with more money. I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that Neil Brown likes money. And that he's going to go to the place that offers him the most. And there are programs out there that might have an opening that will offer him more than Texas Tech will. And if that's the case, a guy like Phil Longo will have a real opportunity at that job.
So let me ask it this way then. We talk about the coach. We talk about recruiting. We'll get back in that in a second with Russell because I'm kind of curious. But, you know, Dave Womack, when he was on this show and then in previous times as well, has mimicked that when very similar to Troy, he thought Arkansas State had as many athletes just in general as Ole Miss or more when they took over the job in 2012.
Yeah.
At least defensively, Ole Miss is sitting at a very similar position to that 2011 team. Offensively, maybe not, but defensively they are. Again, Freeze turning around pretty quick. 12 was at least serviceable. They win 3 SEC games. The ceiling was 5 SEC games because they lost 2 nail biters. So, point being, what is required? You've seen it. What is required for Ole Miss to make that kind of jump to at least the respectability to then start, you know, taking away the apathy, taking away the anger, and at least moving in that direction like they were kind of a half decade ago?
You know what? I'm going to answer the question literally, and it's going to make me sound like a jerk. And I don't mean to, but there are 11 players on defense. You play 11 at a time. And so, if you go out and you sign 12 defensive players, and you hit on 7. And then the next year you go out and you sign 13 defensive players, and you hit on 8. You've added 15 impact players to your defense. You play 11 at a time. It literally is a recruiting thing. It is where the content that Russell puts up on our site right now, this is an ego blow to you and me here, is really more important than anything we can really write, because they're either going to turn it around in recruiting or they won't get it done in recruiting, at which point they won't turn it around. It's literally about players, and then it's about your ability to develop those players, your ability to develop those players quickly, your ability to get those players to acclimate into a system, to make it homogenous, to make it gel. But it's about players, and it doesn't have to be – look, N'Kobe Dean would be a big-time get for Ole Miss on so many levels, but it doesn't have to be N'Kobe Dean. It can be guys like Jaquez Jones and Kevontae Ruggs, guys that you go out and you get that very clearly show their ability to evaluate.
I think Jonathan Hess is going to be good one day.
I think Hess is going to be a good player, especially if you can put him in the right spot and not expose whatever his weakness is. What, he's not going to run a 4-4. So you don't want to – you'd rather him play – I don't know about – you might know, Russell, more about where he fits. But you want to be able to get enough talent around him where you can utilize his strengths and not expose his weaknesses. Look, we've picked on – not intentionally – we've picked on Sanogo some because he's not super fast. He's very smart. He gets in the right place. But sometimes you expose him and you say, hey, let's get you in space, and he gets beaten by an SEC tailback. So you want him playing more inside, tackle to tackle, and less outside in space where the one weakness that he has gets exposed. And you do all of that very simply just by going out and getting the right kind of players and then getting depth. Look at Alabama the other day. Look at the difference on the field in just athleticism and depth. It was evident.
And I don't think depth's a good barometer right now. That's not the point, because that's on the other end.
But it's athleticism, and then you have to add to it.
Well, because you made a good point. I mean, even in this 18 class of what's been on the field, I mean, the message board said this, and they're right. I mean, like Kevontae Ruggs, he's graded out very poorly with Pro Football Focus, but there's no doubt he has the athletic ability and just the ability in general to play SEC football. Frankly, at most programs, he'd be on the shelf right now. He'd be in a weight room. So it's grading him in general is very unfair because he's too raw for that.
I talked to someone at Ole Miss just this week who said he's out there because of our situation. He's not ready. His exact words were, he's not ready.
So point being, I mean, in this freshman class, that you can pretty much guarantee these guys are going to be okay to really good SEC football players. Jonathan Hess, Jaquez Jones for sure. I really like him. Kedron Smith has been very, very good.
Yes.
Kevontae Ruggs. I guess that's it for sure. But point being, that's already four. That's on three different levels. And that's as true freshman right there.
And that was a transition class.
That's my point. Yeah. And even in a transition class, they were able to at least pull the serviceable people to pull themselves up out of where they are right now.
We'll take a break in the show to tell you about some of the exciting things going on in Oxford, including, if you listen before 2 o'clock, double-decker bus tours today, every Friday before Ole Miss home football games, including today as the Rebels battle Kent State tomorrow. Also today, the Clear Creek Music and Arts Festival, and the Oxford Art Crawl is a couple days away, September 25th. So take advantage of those things, as well as the Wizard of Oz at the Ford Center on October 21st. You can go ahead and get your tickets now for that and much, much more, including, remember, on Thursday nights, not just are we live in town, Thacker Mountain Radio broadcast also in front of a live audience on Thursdays, 6 o'clock in front of Off Square Books for that. Additional events and more, visit oxfordms.com/events. We also have a calendar of events online at rebelgrove.com. Podcast also brought to you by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Settle County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting and processing is in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market, a leader in condo financing, and the float-down option. So you lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get that lower rate. You can find Jason at 662-234-2704 or JLO, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. Podcast also brought to you by Oxford Wine and Spirits. You're stocking up today. You're getting into town. Listen to this on the way into Oxford. Head on over to College Hill Road next to Lost Pizza. They're already 5% lower in industry prices as it is. You mentioned the podcast. You spend $150 or more. 5% off wine, 10% off liquor with Oxford Wine and Spirits. I'm headed there here in a little while today as well. And if maybe you don't want to pick it up, you want somebody to do it for you, Locker Stockers, the people for you. Still time You got that locker or that suite at Vaught Hemingway Stadium. They'll fill it up for you before home games. At Locker Stockers, mention the podcast. Maybe get a deal with them as well. You can give them a call at 662-586-1487 or info@lockerstockers.com. They will take care of everything for you. And then finally, the podcast also brought to you by John Edwards with Regency Travel. Ready to take that golf trip, whether it be inside the United States, Bandon Dunes, Kiowa, or other places like Stream Song, or internationally. If you want to go to Paris, if you want to go to St. Andrews, wherever you want to go, John Edwards can hook you and your buddies up for that golf trip. Give him a call at 901-844-6110 or jedwards@regencytravel.net. Back to the podcast now as we continue to discuss Ole Miss football.
This December, and this is where Russell can chime in on where they are and where they have to get. This December / February, however you want to deem national signing days, they've got to add 8 defensive guys who can help them in the next 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. And currently they have several defenders committed. I mean, they have a total of 26 committed for the 2019 class, offense and
defense.
How many
defense. Can they sign total?
33, okay, 34.
Go ahead.
So they have room for about 8 more. And what it really seems that they've been able to do is, like I said on the Soft Verbal when we recorded it yesterday, was they've been able to set themselves up where they've got maybe 3 or 4 SEC caliber ready players, and they have them who they'll be able to, if they need to, you know, make an impact. Before I get, you know, into the class of 2019, you know, you got to go back to 2018 and the kids that didn't qualify. You had Noah Jefferson, who was going to start on that defense, likely, if not fighting for reps with Benito Jones and Josiah Coatney. And then you had Cam White, the safety, who didn't qualify for Madison Central, who they were really excited about and had a really big performance in the Mississippi-Alabama game. Now Jefferson ended up qualifying elsewhere and is playing for Lane Kiffin. And Cam White is playing in Senatobia with the school that doesn't let me interview their players. So, you know, with White, you've got 2 years before you'll actually see him on an Ole Miss campus. But the thing is he could have made quite an impact his freshman year. He would have been able to step up, especially right now, with, you know, with the injuries and everything taking place, that you wouldn't have to shift these players in different positions where they may not be comfortable, may not be mechanically and fundamentally sound. But you have to do it just because, you know, there's the need, and you have to field 11 players. But again, back to the 2019 class, they've got 3 linebackers committed in Sam Williams, who, depending on the defensive scheme, could end up as a defensive end. It all depends. I mean, if you're running the 3-4, he's going to be an outside linebacker. If you're running this 4-2-5, he's going to be on the end, and he's going to be pass rushing. And that's those are both things that he's very good at. Now, if you switch to a 4-3, that's a whole different topic. And that's where you kind of got to figure out if he even fits that system. Other than that, Ashanti Seastrunk from Louisville has a chance. Like I was talking on the Soft Verbal again, he's really started to grow, and he's gotten a lot better. He led that Louisville defense last year, and now that Charles Moore is back down there and healthy, he's been able to really kind of get himself in these opportunities where he's in space, where he wasn't able to do that last year. And then you've got Eric Jeffries, the local kid from Lafayette High School, who, you know, Ole Miss was really impressed by when they saw him in the camp circuit, and he was able to earn that offer. Now really no other schools have come in and pulled the trigger, which is worrisome for Ole Miss fans, but they see enough in Jeffries to warrant the scholarship, the commitment, and the 4-year commitment.
I'm going to ask you a little bit about the 18 class in a second. Anybody else in that class as time goes on? Before we do that, I will get to the trivia question for the week. That, as always, is provided by Blue Delta Jeans, BlueDeltaJeans.com, located just a golf shot away from us here on the or at least 10 Neil golf shots, but one for the average person.
On
the Oxford Square, they have great things in the denim category, the Holland and Sherry that I wore at the game last week as well. So go in, let them fit you, take advantage of it. And if you answer this trivia question, you'll be most of the way toward that. So the question for the week is, I need in any order, I know you don't have to like do it by age or anything, the 3 youngest FBS head coaches currently active right now. Give me 3 of those. You can probably come up with one pretty easily considering who we cover and what's going on with the show. However, give me the three, in any order, the three youngest FBS head coaches currently active in college football.
If you had said best coaches, I would have started with Matt Viator, of course, but I don't know that he's on one of the youngest.
He is not.
I don't think Terry
that takes
Bowden
one away right
either.
There. So
damn.
You can write it on a napkin. You can bring it up here on the table. You can really do that is the recommendation, because I've gotten in trouble a couple times where I've gotten the napkin on the table and somebody's messaged me on Twitter before that. I didn't see it. So then I get in trouble and I have two winners if I'm not careful. And I mean, Blue Delta is really, really generous, but they'd rather not give out 10 winners a week. So just write it on a napkin, throw it up here, and we'll get that accomplished from Blue Delta Jeans. We carry on. So point being, I've mentioned Hess, I've mentioned Kedron Smith, I've mentioned Jacquez Jones, and I mentioned Kevontae Ruggs. The next year, because look, we're in such an instant gratification society, they forget sometimes redshirt sophomores can emerge as well when they're 2 or 3 years into a program. So whether it be 2019 or 2020, give me a couple names from that 18 class that are going to contribute defensively or offensively at the SEC level that are not playing right now.
Well, I mean, the easy one would be DeMarcus Gregory, but Gregory first has to get healthy. He really kind of pushed himself a little bit too hard when he was coming back. He wasn't supposed to be in contact drills. He wasn't supposed to be doing certain things in terms of pushing himself that he ended up doing. Gregory's going to have a chance, especially having two. He'll have two springs. And he'll be fully ready, you know, come next year, whether or not he appears in his four games this season or not. And then defensively, well, either offensively or defensively, whatever ends up happening with him is Jalen Cunningham, the four-star who signed as a defensive tackle from St. Clair. With him, it's just about finding a position and sticking there. For him, he came in as a defensive lineman. He's listed as a defensive lineman on the roster. But then when you go and if you see him at practice, he's working with the offensive linemen.
Is he still 330?
Your guess is as good
okay,
as mine.
Fair enough. Just curious.
He hasn't appeared in a game yet this season. And for him to be such a highly thought of recruit and, you know, to have all the honors, the Alabama offer, the Auburn offer, and to have that, it was just – do we have the right answer there?
We have an incorrect answer there, including the one that would have been a complete given. But I don't know. It's okay. You can take some other shots. Anybody can, you know, just
let me see that answer.
Yeah,
I can ridicule it.
Those are not correct.
Your eyes are in the wrong place, man. you got
that was 0-3.
You
need three names to win, and it was 0-3. And I'm sorry, 1-3. One of them was correct.
Three.
I'm sorry. Yeah. You actually got the youngest one, I think, or the second youngest one, so you're good there. But, still, the other two were incorrect. I will say that Cliff Kingsbury and Scott Frost are not two of the youngest three head coaches in college football.
You have to execute. You've got to get ready. You got to get yourself pumped up, and you have to execute. You have to start better.
Finishing up, going back to the 2018 class, you've got two defensive linemen.
Russell's who, all business. Back to recruiting. Here, go ahead.
Recruiting is what's going to potentially fix the problems at Ole Miss,
yeah,
or it's
ahead.
Going to force change.
Go ahead.
So, you know,
go
one
ahead.
Way or the other.
No one attacked you. Go ahead. Yeah. Execute. Focus.
Cady Hill, the defensive tackle from Eufaula, who is really, from what I was told, you know, when he got to campus from Roach and everybody, is, you know, he really impressed. He wasn't the first freshman defensive tackle to appear in a game. That would be the last one who has really already outperformed, just appearing as a true freshman, in Quentin Bivens from Wayne County.
He's played a little bit. He played on Saturday, I believe, one of the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, he's played over the two of the three games he's appeared in. And people have been pretty impressed with what he's been able to do. Now, the level of competition he was facing at that point in the Alabama game and in the Southern Illinois game, you know, that's still up for debate. But with Bivens, it's just about continuing to develop and to learn the defense. I mean, for him, you know, coming from Wayne County, who I've been told has a pretty good history of developing defensive linemen.
Right.
He was coached in high school, and a lot of these kids, they don't get that. A lot of these kids come in and they're raw, and they don't understand concepts. They don't understand defenses. They just get to the quarterback, or they get to the running back, and they follow the ball. And I think that's also what happens a lot with the linebackers, is that you've got these kids who they just want to follow the ball. you know, you take a play action fake. We watched it in, I forget which game it was. And what happened was the linebacker, as soon as he gave the ball to the running back or was pretending to give the ball to the running back in the read option, the linebacker bit and was all the way near the line of scrimmage. And in turn, the tight end was wide open and caught, I think it was like a 50-yard pass. And getting players who are either, I mean, they can be raw, but if they're raw, you have to have coaches on the staff who can coach them and develop them. You can't just have these coaches who can recruit. Or there's some coaches on the staff who can't recruit or develop. So you've got problems.
Another answer got really, really close this time. We got 2 out of 3 this time.
Just, who was wrong?
Mike Norvell is not a right answer. However, I think he's 4th. So I think we've got 2 of the correct answers, okay. And then the 4th one as we move forward. So really, really close on that one. But we can add Mike Norvell to the list that is not correct there along with the other two. So. Anyway, we'll go there. Let's get into picks for a second while we're moving through. We typically try to talk about those on Thursday. We got Russell up here who has a history with the Mac. History with Akron, right?
Is that is correct. The Zips.
You're a Zip.
One of the only undefeated teams left in the country.
Is Akron and Kent State rivals?
My gosh, are you serious?
Well, stop acting like it's the Egg Bowl or the Iron Bowl.
Have you not seen Russell? He says Kent Reed can't. Right, Kent State.
That's right. And I worked there for a year.
You worked at Kent State?
You worked at Kent State?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Daryl Hazel.
What did you do at Kent State?
I was the video guy. I traveled around and filmed the games and practices, and it was a fun time.
So you once wore the uniform of the Golden Flashes.
That is correct. If you looked on Facebook, you could find a picture with me in a Kent State polo in Manhattan, Kansas, and Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
That is fascinating.
I knew none of this.
Yes.
How about that?
It was an interesting year.
Mr. Golden Flash Russell Johnson himself. So this is an emotional game for you Saturday.
Not at all. Not at all. I really don't think I'm going to see anybody I know. Something that Kent State did, which other programs could have taken note of when they had the chance.
Oh, God.
They cleaned house. Things changed. They almost shut down the football program.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, they were losing so much money under Paul Haynes because what Hazel did was Hazel had Dree Archer, who played for the Steelers, blah, blah, blah. And what happened was he left and went to Purdue, the dead-end job. And they hired Paul Haynes, a former player, la-da-da, and nothing happened. Nothing worked. So what happened, what they did is they cleaned house. I don't think there's going to be anybody who I even recognize on Saturday.
Kent State History Hour brought to you by Russell Johnson over here. They were they're really good at college baseball. They went to the College World Series in 2012, was it? 11, 12?
The trophy between Kent and Akron is a wagon wheel. I can't believe you don't know this.
A wagon wheel?
Yes, it's the wagon wheel.
Do they get Darius Rucker to sing it?
No, sadly they don't.
That's they really mentioned bad. That show when you went with Darius Rucker instead of Old Crow Medicine Show?
Darius Rucker sang Wagon Wheel.
Well, he covered it.
Look, man,
You are the guy that goes to numerous Coldplay concerts, so we'll forgive you.
I've been to one Coldplay concert, and it was damn good.
We have a winner really for our trivia question from Blue Delta Jeans gift certificate being handed out.
The guy looked at me when he found out I went to a Coldplay concert. He gave me that look.
A good look or a bad look?
No, it was a bad look. Like, okay. What the hell? It was really good.
The answers are Mike Sanford at Western Kentucky. He is the new person to the list this year. Lincoln Riley, as everybody knows, and then the head coach of the Kent State Golden Flashes, Sean Lewis. So that is the answer. Russell showing us a wagon wheel over here on the screen. It is literally a wagon wheel. I mean,
That is really
It's
cool.
Better than one particular trophy I can think of off the top of my head.
It's so, better than that Magnolia Bowl trophy.
The woodshop trophy on the piece of wood with the flower on it. So, I mean, wagon wheel's kind of good. It wouldn't be as good as Houston Nutt's hat if they just gave that back and forth with Ole Miss and Arkansas. But it's pretty good. Well, Russell, you can be the guest picker for the week, even though you actually don't get print on the page for some reason here. But
not yet.
Kent State plus 27.5 at Ole Miss, 11 a.m. SEC Network for this one. Mr. McCready, you've got this at 50-20, so you have Ole Miss covering this line on Saturday.
Yeah, I couldn't remember what I picked. Yeah, I'm laying them. I think Ole Miss scores a bunch of points, and I'm gonna predict a defensive masterpiece for the Rebels where they hold Kent State to under 24.
They have not held anyone under 21 points in the last 22 games. It's been almost 2 years since they pulled that off.
I can feel it. I think they're going to come out really fired up. They're going to be focused, and they're going to execute.
It's points galore, and this game's going to take 6.5 hours. I've got it at 52-27 for this one on Saturday.
You have Kent State winning?
No, I do not have Kent State winning, however.
You've got to be more specific. Come on. I think Ole Miss covers the spread. You know, kind of what Neil was saying about the defensive masterpiece. I mean, the offense has to come out pretty upset. Not just upset and not even just motivated, but you know, they were horrible after that first 11 seconds last Saturday. And for them to recoup from that and rebound.
Sometimes 11 seconds is all anyone needs.
That's what she said.
We take a break from the show to tell you that this podcast is brought to you by Robert Gambrell and Gambrell and Associates. Robert knows that many of the people listening to this podcast will never need a bankruptcy attorney or a Social Security disability attorney. However, many of you may be interested in reviewing your financial situation to consider asset protection. This is a part of what a good bankruptcy attorney does. And also, many of you have friends and or relatives that get into difficult financial situations. Gambrell and Associates helps many people work through their times of hardship, whether that results in filing a bankruptcy petition or working to avoid a bankruptcy filing. Others are primarily worried about their credit scores. For those people, many times Gambrell and Associates refer their clients to Brian McLaurin, another advertiser on this podcast. Sometimes people find the easiest way to rebuild credit is similar to what the Cubs did. Tear it down, start over. This can be done by filing for relief under Chapter 7 to get a fresh start. Whatever your needs are, you, your relatives, or friends can get a free consultation for 1 hour or more to help make your decision on what is best for you. Check out Robert Gambrell on avvo.com, superlawyers.com, or give him a call, 662-281-8800. This podcast is also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan, located just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. Grenada Nissan has a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Great lease deals as well. Gene and Sandy have been with the website, the podcast, a long time. They're great people, great service, great product. You will love doing business with the people at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. The podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. Harry's been in Oxford more than 4 decades. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. It's HarryAlexander.com. Click on the Properties Neighborhoods tab. Filter through by what you are looking for, and then send him an email. It's ha@HarryAlexander.com. And Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often, so be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. Now back to the podcast.
Pick. Ole Miss defensively, I mean, they're going to have problems in the first quarter with Woody Barrett. But what's going to be the X factor in the game, which I know you said you didn't do any research on Kent State.
No.
Kent State's DBs, I don't think they have a single defensive back over 6 foot tall.
Really?
And that's going to become a problem. And the offense, at least if they watched film this week, you know, they would recognize that and they'll exploit it.
Neil, what'd you go against the spread last week?
You know, Chase, right now at Neil's Picks, we're more focused on development. We're more thinking about long term. We're not focused right now on immediate results. This is an instant gratification society. And in the world that we live in, that's not what we're focused on.
With the climate today?
In today's climate, I know that's what everyone's so focused on, results and what did you do lately. We're more focused on process.
You were 4-6, if you're curious. You are 500 for the year at 13-13. I mean, it's been 3 weeks. You're only five back, so I'm kind of impressed.
Yeah, you know, again.
And I'm the one that gets to go freeze my tail off in Connecticut or Michigan here in a few weeks.
You're the one that choked like a dog in bowl season.
Not me. You had a really good bowl season.
I was awesome in bowl season. You know why? because I didn't get so focused on results in week one and week two and week three. We developed, myself and all of the interns, we developed a process over the course of the season that by the time we got to bowls, we had it down.
Number two, Georgia, minus 15 at Missouri, 11 a.m. on ESPN. A huge day for any dark horse award season that Drew Locke may have come December.
Well, Drew Locke's going to get awarded in Nashville in early May. He is not going to be rewarded on Saturday. They don't have enough. And Georgia, Kirby Smart, to his credit, has turned Georgia into Alabama. Hey, what color's your hat? I'm struggling with.
It's green.
It's a Masters hat?
Yes.
It's green. You had a beautiful green sweater on when we did the I don't know why I thought of green all of a sudden. I guess Georgia, green, alliteration, that kind of thing.
Yeah, let's go with that. I think Georgia covers that spread. I think the score is going to be 42 to 20.
Yeah, I've got Georgia covering this one as well. Jeffrey is the one holdout, at least amongst the three of us. He has Missouri covering this line. He thinks Drew Locke's going to get his. He is kind of basing that somewhat on last season, but he is the lone person with that. Everybody else has Georgia covering the spread.
Locke is really good, and I don't know how much I went back and kind of watched some highlights of it. They lose to Purdue if Locke is just good. They beat Purdue because Locke is great. NFL teams will look at that film. Seriously, all Purdue jokes aside, and shake their heads and go, we can build on that. He has a serious arm.
You've been really, really impressed. I think it was more of a one-off than anything else, but you have been big on Jimbo to this point. Number 22, Texas A&M, plus 27, almost four touchdowns, at number one, Alabama, 2:30 p.m., CBS on Saturday.
I think Jimbo's doing big things. I really do. I know what I saw on Saturday night. I saw a football team that had they left the starters in, they would have scored 100 points.
You still picked Texas A&M, however, to cover the line.
Did I pick them to cover?
No, you didn't. You actually went the other way. You took Bama.
I think Alabama is not only the best team in the country, I think they're significantly the best team in the country.
See, I think A&M covers that spread. That's a pretty hefty spread.
It's a huge spread.
I mean, yeah.
Against a team that, if nothing else, has athletes. Kevin Sumlin didn't recruit a bad roster.
No, that's the thing. In the state of Texas, you can always recruit. I mean, they just go to their backyard.
South Carolina minus.
Hey, Tom Herman. You struggling with recruiting? Okay, sorry.
Huh?
Sorry. He was talking about Texas always recruits, and I was pointing out that Tom Herman hasn't.
He went 0-2 against Maryland.
Yep.
He's a recruiter. He's not a coach.
By the way, that former LSU offensive coordinator doing okay when he's gotten away from Eddie O as time has moved on, Matt Canada. South Carolina minus one at Vanderbilt, 3 p.m. SEC Network. Vanderbilt gave Notre Dame all it wanted last week. Played really well. Should have won the game, frankly, other than some dumb turnovers. However, kind of jumping on the Neil wagon a little bit here. I like South Carolina. It's going to be fairly close, but I think the Gamecocks take this one in Nashville in front of that raucous crowd and make it work.
How much of that game we're going to get to see on Saturday?
Very little. Well, about a half.
About a half?
Yeah, about a half, something like that.
And you said the spread was what?
One. South Carolina minus one against Vanderbilt.
I'm taking Vanderbilt. I think.
Really?
Yeah. Call me the Vanderbilt September believer, but, I mean, they do this every September. It's going to reach a point where either they're going to be for real one of these times, and I'm going to look like a genius, or that they're not, and things are going to get nasty in Nashville.
Look, I'm a big Derek Mason fan, and he's done a nice job, and Shermer's a solid quarterback. I think South Carolina's better than Vanderbilt, and frankly, I think this is free money.
Louisiana
South
Tech.
Carolina lost to Georgia. They looked bad against Georgia.
They did.
There's going to be a long list at the end of the season of teams that look bad against Georgia.
Notre Dame's looked competent every week. I mean, Vanderbilt, sorry.
Yeah, well, and Notre Dame's looked competent, and that's all they are.
They beat Michigan. They beat Shea Patterson.
Shea tore up Western Michigan. Who did Michigan play last week?
I played SMU one week.
He tore them up, too.
Well, see, that's the thing. Notre Dame's not a bad football team, because if they were a bad football team, Shea Patterson would have torn them up.
Yeah, I said they were competent. He tears up incompetent teams. Okay. He's very consistent.
Louisiana Tech, plus 20.5, almost three touchdowns at number six, LSU, 6 p.m. ESPNU. Fun stat for you, LSU, they've beaten two top 10 teams, and they are actually a negative in yards gained offensively versus defensively. They are giving up more yards defensively per play than they are averaging offensively. This thing is going to fall apart at some point, and I think at least on Saturday, you've been telling me for months, Louisiana Tech, if nothing else, is going to be pumped up for this one. They can keep it inside three touchdowns because Joe Burrow isn't good.
I love this line. I know how geeked up Louisiana Tech's going to be for this game. You unless you live in Ruston, you cannot really understand how big of an opportunity this is for Tech. They will play their game of the year. And LSU, this has sandwich game written all over it. They just had a very emotional, draining win at Auburn. The media has been writing about that win all week, just like anybody would. They've got a big stretch of games against SEC opponents coming up, starting with Ole Miss and including Georgia and Florida and Alabama. And I just think this has sandwich written all over it. I think LSU wins, but I think Louisiana Tech covers.
Number 14, Mississippi State, minus 10.5 at Kentucky. Sorry, Russell. Go ahead. Pick. I'm sorry.
You're running through these.
I'm sorry.
Louisiana Tech's going to cover the spread. Kind of what Neil said, I think it's a trap game. Going between Auburn and Ole Miss and everybody being motivated for that game and doing these weekly box score deep dives and everything with the analytics and the Pro Football Focus, you can see how – I hate to say bad, but how bad Joe Burrow is. You see him when he's thrown under pressure, he's 2 for 19. You see when he's throwing down the field, he's far and well below
average. He's only
averaging
4.7 yards an attempt.
Yeah, and when you see that, I mean, Louisiana Tech may not have a fully competent Power 5 secondary, but they're going to have enough when it comes to covering that spread.
Number 14, Mississippi State, minus 10.5. Pretty big line in Lexington against a pretty competent Kentucky team all of a sudden. And State has won 7 of the last 8 in Lexington, I think losing on a field goal in that other one. So they've done pretty well there. Neil, you have this thing at 34-17. You got a bit of a route for State in Lexington.
Yeah, I don't like this matchup for Kentucky. I think State has a very clear identity. And they're going to play that bully ball at the line of scrimmage. I think that's how you beat Kentucky. I think you take Snell away and you put the game in the quarterback's hands. And I don't think they have the quarterback play to pull that off.
I agree. I think Mississippi State covers that line, and I think it's over by halftime.
I actually took Kentucky here. I think Snell's going to get a few yards. Might even break one along the way.
Is the crush beginning to happen?
No, not yet. He's too popular. I don't like the really popular guy. I got to catch the guy before he gets too popular. However, on the road,
are you not going to take a football lover this year?
What?
Are you not going to take a football lover
this year? I don't
think
so. But we're 3 weeks in and nothing
wow.
so far. Yeah, I know.
Okay, well, interesting.
So I've got Kentucky losing but covering the 10.5 against State in Starkville. And then the last game of the day the last game we're picking, huge line. One of the biggest SEC lines I've seen in a long time, especially not including Alabama. Arkansas plus 30, over 4 touchdowns. At number 9 Auburn, 6 p.m., and this is an SEC network game.
I'd lay 40.
You think the Auburn offense is going to put up that many points?
Arkansas, probably without both of its starting corners off a team that gave up 44 to North Texas.
Auburn is 2-6-1 since 2014, covering lines of this size.
Yeah, those are just numbers. My interns and I have studied this all week, and we feel good about it. We are focused.
Doesn't Arkansas have to be a little better than the last 2 weeks? I mean, they don't. I mean, it's kind of like the Ole Miss defense thing. They can't be worse. Well, yeah, actually.
I don't know.
They could be worse. They could be far worse.
I think right now Arkansas is the worst team in the SEC, and I don't think –
Well, it's not close.
I don't think it's particularly close.
No, I mean, Ole Miss, very, very big opportunity in Little Rock here in a few weeks. The fan base is going to be pretty similar from a crowd standpoint. I mean, Arkansas, as we saw in Fayetteville, even had completely given up last week in the crowd via Tom Murphy, I guess is who it was.
Yeah, Tom's tweet of the crowd shot at the beginning of the third quarter was, woo.
I mean, less than 15,000.
Yeah, it really begged the question, was whatever Mike Norvell did so bad that you just couldn't have done that?
Well, that and the fact that another coach they could have potentially hired was on the opposite sideline in Seth Luttrell. Now, whether or not he was ready for that Power 5 opportunity at this juncture, still up for debate. But, I mean, the way he dominated that game on both sides of the ball.
But you knew Chad Morris was going to have a difficult transition. He was going to run a completely different system than the one that Brett Bielema ran, the one that Brett Bielema recruited to. And you knew that Morris had to run, as we talk about recruiting, Morris has to run that system so that he can show recruits the system he's going to run. And it's just this chicken and egg argument. And he's doing it the right way. But there's no doubt that this becomes a sacrificial season.
But that, and Chad's got the media on his side too, so that always helps.
You mentioned Norvell. Oh, God. Very on his side, right? You've got Norvell. Ole Miss opens at Memphis next year. Is Norvell on their sidelines again next year?
Yes.
I mean, look, we all know something's up here. We all have some idea what's going on. But is it just because since he's already at Memphis, he can just sit there and it doesn't matter? But then when he takes the next gig, it starts going, whoa, 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 background check, background check, background check?
It's a great question. I think so.
Just no one at Memphis is going to uncover it, so here we are.
I don't think anyone in the media necessarily has the chops to uncover whatever it is. I think it's...
No, it's deep dive background checks.
But something in a background check popped up because Florida, Tennessee, Arkansas, Ole Miss, and Mississippi State all went, nope. That's a lot of nopes.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it? Just saying. Just a thought as we... As we move on, Neil, but a couple minutes left here. What going to kind of dovetailing back, let's go back to the beginning of this thing from a rebuild standpoint, what they've got to do, where this thing is for Ole Miss. We all expect some changes at the end of the year. We all expect a class to be, Russell, I mean, this is kind of your question, but good but not great. And for the point for Ole Miss right now, serviceable is kind of the word, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it has to be. I mean, and it has to at least have the potential to be great. Like, you don't want to sign these three stars who are in circumstances and places where, you know, they're pretty close to being maxed out. And that's where it becomes such a key in the evaluation process, where Wojcicki was talking about on this podcast the other day about the 5 for 5 and being able to do that and have those characteristics and to be able to be ready to be coached, to listen to coaches. That sounds so trivial, but in reality, a lot of these high-rated recruits, they don't enjoy listening to coaches. They don't do that, and that's something that they struggle with. But getting to the 2019 class and figuring it out, obviously everybody would love to have N'Kobe Dean, and I've been on the record, and I'll be on the record again on your show here today to tell you that N'Kobe Dean is not coming. N'Kobe Dean, I mean, as much as he's on the Ole Miss campus and everything, I think you can kind of compare that to the Bryce Harper troll job if he doesn't end up with the Cubs.
Let me ask you this. We'll close here, Neil. Maybe this is your question as much as Russell, because it's what keeps striking me about this. Everybody seems to feel the same way with N'Kobe, Florida State, Georgia, two front runners.
I wouldn't say Florida State right now.
Okay, Georgia front runner for N'Kobe Dean right now. We've covered recruiting a long time, Neil. Russell's been very good at it for a shorter period of time, but still enough time to have some experience. That in-state kid, you always have that moment in January or February where we go, well, all right, fine. Things change. Things happen. Is this simply because of Ole Miss's NCAA situation, or why are we not given a certain level of benefit of the doubt that typically happens with in-state kids that aren't favoring Ole Miss or State individually, and you go, okay, that's where they're going?
I think it's the NCAA thing. I also think it's the nastiness of that rivalry is a turnoff to some degree. Both programs, I don't think Ole Miss right now negative recruits. Tyler Siski talked about that. But before these last few years, I think the Hugh Freeze, Dan Mullen dynamic got nasty. I think that kid, Russell can answer this better. I think that turns kids off. I don't think they like it. And then I think it's for Ole Miss, the last couple of years, it's a success thing or a lack thereof. So Matt's back in that spot where you have to convince kids that the success comes, that you have to sell kids on you get to be a big part of this rebuild. And that's why in many ways this class that is the one that I will call Matt Luke's first class is the one that has to be building blocks. It doesn't have to be the tallest building. It just has to be building blocks. And then the next one, that 2020 class, he's got to go add stars.
And that's going to be a problem because the state of Mississippi, the talent level from the class of 2019 to the class of 2020 drops significantly. Right now, there's probably between 25 and 30 SEC caliber players in the state of Mississippi for 2019.
What about Memphis?
I mean, the class of 2020 in Memphis is loaded. But
you got to make that happen. However, that's going
to
happen.
You have to make that happen. Whether it's hiring somebody from their staff or figuring something out, that problem has to have a solution. Especially because you have two of the best linebackers in the country in that area.
I bet I know a couple of names on that solution.
That's what I was about to say too. Got an idea there. Maybe as this thing moves forward, you want to give one?
Do I want to give a name?
I'm curious, man.
Not with 9 games left.
Okay.
Let's be cool.
In a few weeks.
Huh?
Let's talk after ULM or so.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, all jokes aside, I mean, I don't think this defense is going to necessarily turn it around, but there are defenses that in the history of football have been awful for 3 weeks and then were better by the end of the year. So
sounds like the Saints.
Oh, we're going to do a Saints thing. I'm staying out of that.
It is Saints-Falcons on Sunday.
I just think I think it's a little early to kind of write obituaries, but everybody knows. I mean, look, let's say Kent State rolls 490 yards and 31 points in an Ole Miss 52-31 win. No one's walking out of that stadium going, "Oh yeah, we got this thing turned around. Here we go." They're wanting change. So, and then if you go down to Baton Rouge and things go poorly there, at some point Matt's going to have to address it. He knows that. We're not. I mean, McGriff knows that. Everyone knows that. It's a results business. It's a scoreboard business. You can get mad at media, and you can get mad at all the people who cover you and who cheer for you and message boards and stuff. The scoreboard on Saturday when they start that game is going to read 0-0, and both teams are going to start with 0 yards. And no one that talks about it, none of us, no one in the stands, no one is going to have any impact on what the final stats say. It's one of the great things about that job is that ultimately you're in the scoreboard and stat business and nobody else gets to contribute to it. It's all on you.
Yeah. Ole Miss, Kent State, we'll find out the next chapter Saturday, 11 o'clock for that one. Again, this up in the morning on all forms of MPW Digital. We've got Spotify, we've got Google Music, and the like. Another week, another Blue Delta Jeans trivia winner as well. So appreciate them. Appreciate Russell back here next Thursday, 2 days prior to Ole Miss and LSU, an 8:15 start for that one in Baton Rouge. We'll talk to you then.